Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
Rex Ogle is an award-winning author of several books, comics, and graphic novels, and he enjoys reimagining old stories with modern teenage sensibilities. His first graphic novel, Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy, was a love letter to Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. It was a young adult graphic novel that pays tribute to a book, the 1908 classic Anne of Green Gables, that helped him through difficult times. And he has written a graphic novel now, his new graphic novel, Dan in Green Gables, and it's a modern reimagining of Anne of Green Gables. Rex Ogle writes under the pen name Ray Terciero and has an illustrator for Dan with Green Gables, who was Claudia Aguirre, a Mexican lesbian comic book artist and writer. Rex Ogle, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Now, this is a young adult novel, and I think it's nice what you say at the beginning of your book. You speak directly to the reader. Would you read how you kind of warn the reader of your book?
Yeah, sure thing. It says, "Howdy, reader. Just a quick trigger warning. This story contains instances of bullying, physical assault, and homophobia. I apologize in advance if this is upsetting, but know that I lived through these things, and so I handled these moments with extra care. I want you to enjoy the book, but make sure to take care of yourself first."
And those are the words of Rex Ogle, also known as Ray Terciero. And also, I'm going to add Dan, because Dan is the name you've given the protagonist in your book. But I think that's you. In fact, would you say that your book is historical fiction?
You know, I feel like, I hate to date myself, but yeah. I feel like I talked to librarians this past week at the American Library Association, and they're like, "You write so much amazing historical fiction." And I was like, no, it's new. And they're like, "It's older than 20 years, it's historical fiction." So yeah, Dan in Green Gables was very much inspired by two things. One, obviously, Anne of Green Gables. I loved that book when I was a kid in fourth grade. I read it four or five times. My family was moving from town to town to town as my parents were looking for work. And they had picked me up suddenly from school. And I didn't get to say goodbye to my friends. I didn't get to pack my own stuff. My mom had packed for me. And I did not get to return my copy of Anne of Green Gables to the library. So as Anne Shirley was looking for a home, I was looking for a home. So that story just really resonated with me. And then second, this is very much a love letter to my grandfather, to my dad's relatives in Tennessee. They grew up in Sevierville, just right near Obergatlinburg, which I think is where Dolly Parton grew up. I mean, Dollywood is literally right there. So yeah, I wanted to write this book is a kind of ode to my relatives who I wish would have embraced me a little more as a kid, not just because of, you know, living with my mom, who is very poor, who is Mexican, but also for me, who is a very sensitive queer boy, which very much went against what they believed in.
Yeah, so here you are, and you say in Texas, I think, and you just say it's just an ordinary day, and you're in the fourth grade, and you get called to the principal's office, and you thought, "Oh, I must be in trouble."
Yeah.
But instead, your mother was waiting there at the front doors, and when you wonder what's going on, she just says, "We're going to have ourselves a change of scenery." Mm-hmm. And the family truck was already packed with your stepdad, your baby brother, and boxes and things. And it turned out to be fortunate that as you were leaving, you say, San Marcos, Texas.
Yep.
And you're moving to Boulder, Colorado. And fortunately, you had this copy of Anne of Green Gables. And that, I think, is surprising that you, just a fourth grader, you could appreciate Anne of Green Gables. That's a book from 1908. What was appealing to you? How did that book appeal to you, Rex?
I mean, at my age, you know, I grew up in the rural Texas in the 80s, and I mean, there was not a plethora of books like there are now. I mean, there were plenty of classics. There were, you know, there was Little Women, there was, you know, Wuthering Heights, which was well above my pay grade. but I was reading books like Anne of Green Gables because they were the closest thing I had for someone my age, because it, you know, there was a deficit in between, you know, Dr. Seuss and Hardy Boys. I guess Hardy Boys was filled that space. My point being is that there wasn't as much to read for middle graders and elementary students as there are now. There's so much wealth in literature, which is amazing. But back then it was a little more scarce. And for me, you know, growing up the way I did, like I didn't really respond to, you know, books about rich kids or books about people who had means. I wanted to see myself reflected in the books. And so books like Anne of Green Gables, about this orphan who, you know, really has to work hard to find her place in this world and to make herself a home. I was like, I mean, I don't think I understood it in these big of terms back then, but on some level I was like, well, if she can build a home for herself, then I can build a home for myself.
My guest is Rex Ogle. He writes under the name Ray Terciero, and his book is Dan in Green Gables. And, you know, I think if I were, say, a fourth grade teacher, Rex, I would be happy to see a book like yours, because probably kids, you mean we're going to read Louisa May Alcott? And to see, here's an example of somebody who really was relied on this book to help him through difficult times. So I would appreciate if I were, say, a fourth grade teacher, that you wrote this book, Rex.
Yeah, thank you. I you know, as a writer, as an adult now, I am trying to write the books that I wanted as a kid, which I suppose can be very specific. You know, I was very poor. And so, you know, I've written about poverty a lot in my books. I have domestic violence. I, you know, dealt with home instability. I dealt with being Mexican, being queer. Like, there are so many things that as a kid felt like bad things. And now, you know, I have the privilege of being old enough to see that those weren't bad things. Those were just who I was. They just weren't necessarily embraced by society or by religion. And now I want to create safe spaces in books for kids to see themselves the way I wish I'd been seen at that age.
Well, you know, you mentioned bullying in your note to the reader. And it seems to me that bullying is more of a problem now than it was when you were growing up, even though that was not that long ago. I just feel so bad for kids that are bullied. And with cell phones, and I think it's worse. The bullying is worse, even worse now.
Yeah, I do, I don't know, dozens of school visits every year, usually with fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. And like one day recently, like a month ago, I made a comment about bullying, and I was like, I'm hoping now it's better because everyone's so socially aware. You know, I just feel like as a society, we've come a long way. We talk about mental health. We talk about, you know, bullying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just thought it had gotten a little better. And all these kids, they reared up. The one kid stood up and was like, no, bullying is worse than ever. And another kid added, you know, you did not have social media when you were our
That was my point too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, kids are vicious. Gosh. And I think when they get to hide behind, you know, cell phones, they can even be more cruel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems to me the case also. Gosh. Well, you have an illustrator that, oh my goodness, the illustrations are so impressive. And Claudia Aguirre is the name of the your illustrator. And yeah. When I look at the cover of your book, I see the protagonist, this red-haired young man who's quite handsome. And I'm thinking, oh, Claudia must have looked at you and say, yeah, I'm going to make this character look just like Rex.
Oh, that's very sweet of you.
So you're a handsome redhead?
You know, here's the funny thing is, so my abuelo's from Mexico, so I'm half Mexican. So
excuse me. Would you repeat that word? Because abuela is not a word. Maybe some people don't know what abuela
means. Oh, I see. Yeah. My abuela, my grandmother, is from Mexico, and you know, so I'm half Mexican. So I have the luxury of having the very brown olive skin, which when I spend time in the summer outside, oh my gosh, I tan up so fast. I turn so brown. But from my dad's side of the family, you know, they're all, you know, hillbillies up in the Smoky Mountains. But they say that they're from Scotland. And I will say, like, when I was a kid running around on the beach in Guam and Okinawa, because my dad was in the Air Force, long story. But I have these pictures of me with strawberry blonde hair. It was just like, it was golden red. And as I got older, like, it got darker. But it's so funny because if I spend too much time in the sun, it starts to lighten. It starts to curl. I have so much red in my beard. So, yeah, I'm not a redhead, but I guess I've always had a flame for redheads my whole life. So it must be that Scottish genetics deep inside me.
Yeah, I can identify. I was a redhead before my hair turned white myself. They remind listeners that the title of your book, Dan in Green Gables, A Modern Reimagining of Anne of Green Gables. And I mentioned your illustrator has a picture of this young man with his phone attached. And you also, in addition to these wonderful illustrations that Claudia has made, I noticed that you have somebody who did the lettering, because the writing is very neat and very clear. Yeah. So you actually had somebody, a separate person, to do the lettering in your graphic novel.
Yeah. So I grew up on comic books. Like, I mean, all I ever wanted to do was write X-Men. Like, that was always my big life goal. I moved to New York City when I was 22. One of my first jobs was at DC Comics, where I was an editor. And I learned about the whole process of making comic books and those graphic novels. You know, the artist, you know, they do the pencils, the ink. Sometimes they even do the colors. Claudia did the colors. She did such an amazing job.
She really did. Yeah.
So amazing. But lettering in itself is kind of its own talent. And it's funny because a lot of people are like, it's not a talent to letter. And I was like, actually, because when you're doing a visual story, you know, you can play with the words. You can play with the way the letters come across. You know, I'm flipping through the book right now, and like, I asked, you know, if someone is whispering, you know, the font should be smaller or maybe grayed a little bit so it's not quite as bold as black. You know, if someone is yelling, you know, the balloon should be bigger. Maybe put the letters in a different color, like red or purple, you know, make it bigger. You know, even the captions, you know, and when there's two people speaking in the next room, you know, on one page, on page 42, the letterer chose to put them in two different colors so you know two different people are speaking in the next room because you don't actually see them. Like, there's such a talent to it. And so not only did Claudia nail the art, but the letterer, you know, just did such an amazing job. Their name was Lore, so Lore Prescott.
In fact, the very opening page of your book is praise for Dan in Green Gables. And this is a New York Times bestselling author who wrote this, and here's what she said. She said, with dreamy, expressive illustrations and a vibrant protagonist who leaps off the page, this graphic novel is a beautiful exploration of a queer teen making a small town into a place he can call home. What a nice thing she wrote.
Yeah, and this is Molly Knox Ostertag. They are so talented. So when I got that blurb, I was like, what?
Yeah, but I agree with her, what she says about the illustrations and the protagonist. Well, I mentioned that as I'm reading this, Dan, to me, is you. You as your name, Rex Ogle, and also you are the author under the name Ray Terciero. So I was hoping you would read the very back of your book. The title of this is From Anne to Dan, A Letter from the Author. So, Anne, you want to explain Anne to Dan?
Absolutely. My parents, my mom, the daughter of an immigrant from Mexico, and my dad, a low-ranking soldier from the foothills of Tennessee, met on a military base. About a year later, I was born. By age two, my tan skin and strawberry curls set me apart from both sides of my family. My mom didn't allow me to speak Spanish, and so I couldn't speak with my abuela in her native language. When I went to visit my dad's relatives in Tennessee, most of them laughed at me for looking like I washed dishes. And of course, knowing I was queer at a young age made me feel all the more different. When I was in fourth grade, my mom and her abusive boyfriend moved us from town to town looking for work. I changed schools 4 times in 8 months, leaving behind books, toys, and clothes as we downsized with every location. But there's one constant in my life, a copy of Lucy Maud Montgomery's 1908 classic, Anne of Green Gables. I checked out the paperback book from Travis Elementary in San Marcos, Texas, and never had a chance to return it before my mom spontaneously picked me up at school with my life already packed away in the back of our truck. On the drive, Anne surely kept me company from town to town, across state lines, and through a Colorado winter blizzard, with me wrapped in a sleeping bag in the back of a truck surrounded by my few belongings under a camper shell. This redheaded 11-year-old orphan gave me something my family couldn't. That was hope. My father's mother, June, always loved me. Of all the ogles, she was the only one who kept hugs and chocolate-covered pretzels waiting for me. I lost her to breast cancer in middle school, but in high school, I visited my estranged grandfather hoping to reconnect. I dressed wrong, I talked wrong, I didn't go to church, I read the wrong books, and certainly too many of them. And of course, there was my unspoken queerness. This retired military man would look at me and snort, a clear sign of his disappointment. I didn't get a happy ending on that account, but I would like to offer a better version of my story to young readers. With my first graphic novel, Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy, I crafted a love letter to New York City and Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. With Dana Green Gables, I'd like to pay homage to a book that helped me through difficult times and offer compassion and love to my relatives in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee by focusing on happy memories of them and what could have been if they'd more fully embraced me. Life can be, in turns, difficult and wonderful. But if my readers can learn from Dan, as I once learned from Anne, I think life might feel just a little bit lighter.
This is my guest, Rex Ogle, writing under the pen name Ray Terciero, and the title of his book is Dan in Green Gables, a modern reimagining of Anne of Green Gables. And I think that almost brings me to tears, Rex, reading what your childhood was like. Oh, my goodness. And unfortunately, I think there are other kids like you who would be given hope by reading your book. And you also, I thought it was nice that you were not putting down your relatives in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. And you you say that you offer compassion and love to these relatives. And I think that's also a good example for younger people. Say, oh, my gosh, these relatives that have been so mean to me or treated me badly, but I'll focus on happy memories of them. I really think that was nice of you to write that, Rex.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, that's the thing in all my books. Like, you know, I've written several memoirs, and my parents don't come off in the best of light. But I have pointed out to readers, and I believe I even say it in some of the afterwards, like my purpose in writing these books is not to demonize my parents. You know, every one of us has generational trauma that has been passed down from parent to child, yeah. Parent to child over and over and over again. So, you know, when I was younger, I hated my parents, then I hated my grandparents for making them who they were. Then I hated my great grandparents. And then I realized I was like, what does all this hate do? All it does is, you know, why be angry at anybody? Like, we all have this trauma, and there are people who are able to deal with it. There are people who are able to heal. And then there are people who aren't. And, you know, I am lucky enough that I don't know if I'm built differently or if it's because of my abuela or because I had a sister who died when I was young. And so I told her, like, I would live for both of us, like, I just wanted so much out of life, and I didn't have time to hate people, including the people who treated me badly as a kid, including my relatives. I was just like, it's such a waste of time. Let's go find things to smile about. Now, mind you, I've been depressed and anxious for most of my life, suffering from PTSD and bipolar and all this other stuff. And so I'm 46 now, and I have, you know, worked very hard for the last 26 years to get to where I am today. So being happy is a luxury, but it's funny because Dana in Green Gables couldn't have come in at a better time, because his message of building a home, like putting in the effort to build a home, is very much my message now, which is like, being happy is hard. And I've put in a lot of work to get here. And now that I'm here, I'm just like, oh, I just want to share it with everybody.
Well, Rex, I imagine parents buying a copy of your book for their teenager and reading it themselves and making it a gift to their child. I really would hope that that would be the case.
Me too.
Thank you for writing this book, Rex.
My pleasure.
Again, my guest has been Rex Ogle. He has written under the name Ray Terciero, and the title of his book is Dan in Green Gables, A Modern Reimagining of Anne of Green Gables. We're going to take a short break, and when I come back from the break, Chico author Nancy Anderson will tell us about her book, New Leaf. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. Author Nancy Anderson came to Chico because her husband's family had a rice farm in Richvale. She enrolled at Chico State University for a master's degree in nutrition education and started teaching basic nutrition at Butte College in Chico State. She authored a textbook used for a course in global foods and nutrition. Nancy Anderson retired after teaching at Chico State for 15 years. A 2010 trip to Nepal was life-changing and resulted in the opening of a care home for young girls suffering from abusive or neglected situations. The name of that care home is New Leaf, which is also the title of her new children's book. Nancy Anderson, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, the title of your book, New Leaf, doesn't tell us now. Is that figurative? Is that literal? And lots of trees have leaves. So what kind of leaf are we talking about? Why don't you just read us the very first page of your book?
I'd love to. In a small rural village in southern Nepal stands my mango tree.
So this tells us two things. It tells us where this story is taking place, southern Nepal. And it tells us about a mango tree. So we're expecting, so that new leaf must have to do with that mango tree. Now, toward the end of your book, you tell us why you chose to write a book about a mango tree, Nancy.
Okay, yes.
Would you read that section of the very end of your book?
This mango tree story is what our home is all about. New leaf, new life, new fruit. The New Leaf home has been a place of hope and restoration where a miracle of healing begins. Our girls experience a family that cares, and each girl receives an education, employment, training, development of work skills, an opportunity for further professional development in college, and a chance for marriage. Whatever path the girls desire, they receive help in realizing their goals.
Now, Nancy, where is this care home located?
This is in Kathmandu, capital of Nepal.
So if people think this is important, you invite them to help support this care home.
Yes, we do. We have several supporting churches and individuals.
Right here in Chico.
And around, yes. There are three churches in Chico that support the home, and there's one in Los Angeles that's very involved.
Okay, well, why don't you continue reading when you founded this home? Because I mentioned that You made a trip to Nepal in 2010.
Yes.
That and was life-changing.
Yes.
So would you continue that since 2010?
Yes. So our first trip to Nepal in 2010 was really to look into how our church could get involved with a pastor that was already there. And some friends from Chico knew a friend in L.A., and he had gone to Nepal every year. So that motivated other two men especially to put a trip together, and it was kind of an exploratory trip, the first one. Then we realized the needs there, and in 2011...
Now, when you say we, you went with your church group.
Yes.
And your daughter also.
Yes, yes. My husband was invited along with several men, and six men, and I wanted to go, and my daughter wanted to go. We love adventure, and we weren't that welcome at first. They said they'd never taken women in, these trips, and we said, we're tough. We can do this. We won't be any trouble, and they let us go. So
you and your daughter joined this group of people who weren't necessarily okay. Yeah. We'll let you come with us.
Yes. And it was life-changing. So that's what motivated the book.
So you say, how many girls have you helped out
since
2010?
We've had 30 plus, around 30, yes. They've experienced hope from their brokenness. They were all girls that... were either abused or abandoned and referred to us through a organization in Kathmandu that is run by previously trafficked girls. And so they refer them to us. So we have seen miracles happen leading to these girls to have new life, new hope. And that's why the New Leaf... story, that's what it's about, because there really wasn't hope for new growth, and we've seen it.
So is it because these girls, you were offering them a new leaf, a new life, that you chose to say, oh, well, I'll write a book about a mango tree?
Well, it's interesting because one of the young men from Nepal, a high school boy, came and lived with us for several summers. He was the son of the pastor that was there that we had a connection with. So he didn't have a lot to do in the summers in Nepal. So he came and lived with us, and he would tell us about the mango tree in his backyard, how much they loved it. And they, you know, climbed it in the summer and gave him shade, and they picked the mangoes. And he'd say they were these small green mangoes, and he's never seen them here in America, but they were delicious. And then a storm came and knocked it over, and he was sad. And I thought of how many of us as children loved to climb trees and to find ones that had fruit. And it just put in my mind a story of something that we, you know, love, but then it got destroyed. And
so the story in your book is based on a real life experience.
Yes.
Now, you were saying it was a young boy that did it, but since this is a home for young girls,
yes,
your protagonist is a young girl.
That's
and
right.
So when she says my, we know, oh, okay. And one way we know is your illustrator has drawn a picture of a young girl.
Yes. Yes.
And who was your illustrator? How did you come by your illustrator?
Well, that's another interesting story. I probably had six or seven artists drop out. They kept, for one reason or another, you know, things would come up. And finally, a friend in Colorado said she would, you know, try to do this. And she started working on it. She says, I can't do people. I can do the other, but I have a friend that can. And so she referred me to Madeline. I've never met her face-to-face. We've only done FaceTime. I have so much respect for her. And I sent her pictures, and she did.
Well, we don't know, because you just identify her as M.
Yes.
Einfeld.
Yes.
So the M is for Madeline.
Madeline, yes. And she lives in Maine.
Oh. So, so these young women are being supported at this in Nepal, And so you also say this book is dedicated to our founding house parents and directors. And when you say founding directors, you don't give names, you just give initials, founding directors P and D. Do you want to tell us who the, where the?
Sure. The reason I didn't put names in there is just to protect them in Nepal, because just for their own protection, really. But yes, we call him Bob. He has a Nepali name, Bob and Debbie, and but they have given their life to Nepal. And Debbie actually was a Kansas girl, met Bob, and in Texas, and she wanted to do mission work, and she was headed to Russia, and then married him and went to Nepal. They moved to Nepal, and there were really no Christians in the whole area. It's very Hindu. And so they had a ministry there to bring the gospel to Nepal, and they worked there a long time.
Your founding fathers, if I want your the founding directors were Americans.
One was
one,
and one Nepali.
Okay,
and
the husband was Paul. Okay.
Nepali, and yes,
yes,
and so the Adhikaris, yes, and so he married a Kansas girl, and she joined in.
So you dedicated the book to these founding house parents and directors.
Yes,
and who else were you dedicating this book to?
Well, I've dedicated it to Kevin Harvey, and he is from Chico. He passed away last November of cancer, and he was on our first team that went to Nepal, and his life changed completely, as all of us. We really didn't know what had happened to us after that trip, but he had the idea for a care home, and we kept saying, how can we do this? It seems too hard. And he goes, no, we can do this. And he just kept the dream going, and he loved Nepal. He went several times, and he did see the book before he passed away, but he was so instrumental in keeping us on track and letting this dream happen.
Well, you say you dedicate the book to the founding directors, our house moms,
yes,
our beloved current directors,
yes,
our Nepali board, our U.S. team. And I wanted to focus on that word team because it's in your email address. If people feel inclined to support this, that you have found, that you help support.
Yes.
The email address has the word team in it.
Yes.
And as you might expect, it says New Leaf Team.
Yes.
So why don't you give us that whole email address?
Yes. If anyone's interested in getting a copy of the book or supporting the home or finding out any more information, our website is newleafteamchico@gmail.com. And I get the mail, and you can make attention to Nancy Anderson or that just to newleafteamchico@gmail.com is good, and we will get back to you.
So my guest is Nancy Anderson, and her children's book is New Leaf. Nancy Anderson and I will continue our conversation after a short break. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest is Nancy Anderson. Her book is New Leaf. And on the cover is a young girl and some leaves. And so we think, oh, that's literally new leaf. But we learn it's more than just a literal new leaf. Why don't you read us a little bit more of, you just start at the beginning. And
okay, sure. In a small rural village in southern Nepal stands my mango tree. I love to climb our steep stone steps to the balcony landing of our tall house and lean over the newly painted wood railing. I look out back and see the rough cement of the well and my thick green mango tree. Off in the distance are several small fields of newly planted spring green rice and a tall hedge of sugarcane. My mango tree stands firmly planted near the well. It gives us delicious green mangoes in the summer. Leaves of every shade of green delight my eyes. Tall grasses bend gently in the breeze.
Now, Nancy, I'm noticing that in the illustration, there's a tree there, but there's this little dog in the illustration, and I felt sad just looking at this poor little dog.
I know. It's typical Nepali. There are many kind of mangy looking dogs.
And he's so skinny.
I know.
How did your illustrator know to include that poor little dog?
I had a picture. And the reason I started the book this way is because when we first trip to Sesotia, that's where we stayed, was in a tall house. They're very tall and kind of skinny, but and we went way up to the top steps. Railing,
I mentioned to listeners that that these steps are in your illustrator had this little girl walking up some steps, and I figured that was based on reality.
That yes,
was a very nice illustration, and I can imagine that it looks just like that.
And we'd look out and see the well and the mango tree.
And speaking of well, the illustrator drew where they got their water. She illustrated where they drew their water. Did you have a photograph of that? Is that how she
Yes,
knew?
I did.
Ah. And so why don't you go ahead and read that next page about near the mango tree.
So near my mango tree is our well where we draw our water.
And that kind of well is not like just a hole in the ground. It has a pitcher pump on it.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's where they got their water.
Yes.
Okay. And then
looking out front, I see my village neighbors by their thatched roof houses. They tend to their oxen and goats as they talk to each other. Red, orange, and yellow colors catch my eye from their bright clothing. That's what impressed me so much was the beautiful color. You look out and you just see all this color. And little village, everyone talking to each other, tending to the children.
And we
Very
see our little
primitive.
Girl looking out at this kind of open area.
Yes.
And there's some animals in there and some women walking with something on top of their head. So
yes,
they're carrying things
carrying,
on their head.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it struck us because we'd never really been around water buffalo that much. And that's what they use. They milk them. They use the buffalo milk. And they use them to take the carts between the other villages, and it was very intriguing. So in the stifling heat, I climb my mango tree and hide in its cool shade. We play in the tree all summer long. Happy noises come from my mango tree. We eat the mangoes right off the tree, and sweet juice drips down our chins. And that was based on what Deepak told me about his childhood, because he grew up in that house.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
this
is about the girls, but he actually told me about the tree, and I saw the tree. Around sundown, my friends and I run home, and the mango tree is quiet under the changing sky.
And this is very colorful, too. Your illustrator had beautiful colors there.
I thought she did a lovely job. I was so, so pleased. A frightful storm comes to my village. The thunder booms. My eyes are big and my heart is pounding. I watch sticks and leaves and dust whirl as the wind blows fiercely. Frequent lightning flashes across the blackened sky. Rain falls fast and hard. I am afraid. Morning comes. I run out to see my mango tree and it is broken. The branches are ripped off. The remaining leaves are shredded. The broken branches are scattered on the flattened and soggy grass. I'm sad. I cry.
And this, you say, was actually what this young man described to you.
Yes, this actually did happen with the tree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for these girls, and really, in a way, for everybody, we go
through
storms.
When she says, "I'm afraid."
Yes.
That's a scary illustration there.
Yes.
Lightning.
And Madeline, our wonderful artist, showed this to her children when she did it because she wanted it to look. And they just said, "Oh, Mom, that's scary." Oh, you know? And so.
Let remind listeners who my guest is. Her name is Nancy Anderson. She lives here in Chico, but she supports a home for girls in Nepal. And she, you want to give that email address in case a listener would like to support you?
Sure. It is newleafteamchico@gmail.com.
Okay. Now, the story, so they're scared because what happens to their...
The fierce storm comes, and then our girl runs out to see the tree, and it's broken. Just, you know, paralleling that their lives have been broken. Mm-hmm. And most of us have gone through some storms in our lives, but for these girls, pretty severe and pretty frightening. And so that's why I picked that. Then some village people are here and say, "Let's cut it down because there's no hope." But others say, "Let's wait and see." So for a lot of these girls, I think people do think it's hopeless, you know. Mm-hmm. They just don't have a chance, and that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. The seasons have changed, and fall and winter are past. Since my mango tree does not show any change, most of the village people say, "Surely the mango tree is dead."
And your illustrator has some people talking in the foreground, and in the background is this tree that does look dead.
Mm-hmm. Some village people say, "Let's wait and see what happens." So I wait.
And again, that I is this young girl.
Yeah.
And there she's looking. She has a sad expression on her face, and she looks kind of hopeless.
Mm-hmm. The broken tree needs to be nurtured. A few people whom I do not recognize come forward to gently protect and lovingly care for my mango tree. The dead wood and broken pieces are carefully cut away to encourage new growth. A basket is placed around a section of my tree to keep it from harm. I wanted to emphasize that there were people that came from far away to help, and it, kind of in the pruning and the watering and the nurturing. And one thing that struck me in Nepal is they put baskets, these beautifully woven baskets they've made, around plants when they first plant them to protect them. And I thought it was so pretty.
Well, the illustrator looks like he's watering the tree. Shows a lady, we don't see her face, but she's pouring, looks like water, to this broken tree.
Mm-hmm.
It says, "The broken tree needs to be nurtured."
And in our home, there are several Nepali house moms that help, and they're very nurturing. My broken tree begins to mend. I see some new yellowish pink leaves coming from one of the torn branches. My mango tree is alive. The new leaf cluster pushing forth is young and tender, bright and healthy. I feel excited and happy. The children and the villagers come to see the new leaves pushing out from the dead-looking branches. They nod and smile and point at new life. Spring is here. A nest is in my mango tree. Hope is springing up in my heart. My mango tree is more vibrant and beautiful than it was before the destructive storm. Beautiful white blossoms are emerging. I look closely. I can see where the new growth is covering up some of the scarred and damaged wood.
And that is a nice, it says, my mango tree is more vibrant and beautiful than it was before the destructive storm. That to me is a sentence of hope.
Mm-hmm.
Here's this young girl who she's really down. She thinks her tree is dead. And not only does it come back, but more vibrant and beautiful than it was before the destructive storm.
Yes, I really want to emphasize it's about hope. Hope and restoration. Beautiful white blossoms are emerging. I look closely. I can see where the new growth is covering up some of the scarred and damaged wood. We are once again playing in the shade of my mango tree. I hear a shout of joy come as my friend sees some new fruit forming. It's not ready yet, but its promise is here. I am hopeful.
There's that word hope again.
Yes.
Let me remind people that my guest is Nancy Anderson, and she's reading from her children's book, New Leaf.
My healthy tree is bearing fruit. We gather the fruit in several baskets. The terrible storm did not kill it. All who see it are amazed. Some say it's a mystery. Some say it's a miracle. I think it's both. Many years have passed since the storm. My tree is full, whole, and healthy again. It is tall, thick, and strong. I know it is a miracle that my mango tree survived the storm and is bearing fruit. Some fruit has dropped to the ground nearby and is taking root. My children love to run and play around the baskets of the two new mango trees growing behind our village home in the Terai of southern Nepal. I see the miracle of new life, and I am thankful.
And again, my guest is Nancy Anderson. She lives in Chico, and she supports and invites you to support a home for young girls, a care home. And it is hopeful. And you mentioned the village home, and I'm assuming that's where you went when you went to Nepal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what was it like to be there? You're coming here from California. How was your experience arriving in Nepal, in southern Nepal?
Yes, it was shocking at first because everything was so primitive. It was like walking back in biblical times or way back in history. There were, there were oxen and water buffalo and all these animals and ox carts and gorgeous color, but so primitive in how people lived and got their water. And we'd walk by someone harvesting rice, and it would take them all day to get a little pile of rice because they'd be holding it up in a basket with the wind blowing. And everything was different.
And it must have been such an eye-opener for your daughter who was with you.
Yes, she absolutely fell in love with Nepal and with the home and has gone back a few times. And one time when we were all there again, she said, "Mom, I'm not coming back. I'm going to stay." I thought, as a mom, you go, you think so? And we had, you know, friends in the village that would take care of her. And she stayed in the villages, and she washed her clothes and beat them on the rocks in the river with the women. And she, to this day, has relationships built with them, and she loved it.
What a nice way to end this conversation, Nancy. I want to give you a chance to give your email address again if listeners want to support your care home. Again, my guest has been Nancy Anderson, and the title of her book is New Leaf.
Thank you so much. And if you would like any extra information about the book or about the care home, it's newleafteamchico@gmail.com.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you for having me.
I'd also like to thank my first guest, Rex Ogle, author of Den in Green Gables. And next we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
Crocheted doilies, hidden away in trunks by modern women too chic for those dust catchers, passed down to me by my Iowa farm grandmas and great aunts, crocheted at the end of the day, after hoeing weeds, digging spuds, washing sheets, beating rugs, mending socks, baking bread, milking cows, scrubbing floors, canning pickles, feeding hens, farmhands, family. While all the rest were asleep, their sturdy wrists and knobby fingers, scented with bleach, twisted a sharp needle in the silent shadows of kerosene lamp. wove a spider web of symmetry to keep good the arms of chairs and make the table fancy. The time is now to unearth them, free them from mothballs, drape long doilies round us, hold them high to wave like banners, crown ourselves with crocheted diadems, process past cheering crowds to deck the walls of the Galleria dell'Arte. Meditate on lace mandalas and the hands that spun a delicacy of snowflakes. After my grandmother died, I lifted gently the dust catcher off her dresser, left a pattern too fragile to touch. Joan Goodrow.
Cruiser, the greatest dog ever. I thought you'd sworn your love to me the day when we first met. I'd forever be your alpha wolf, and you'd be my pet. It was not too long before you drifted to other neighbors' doors. You watched them as they did their work, and you slept upon their floors. At first, they studied your jingling tags in the hopes they'd find your home. It turned out that they weren't mystified, for only four doors down, you roam. You return to me from time to time, and from guilt, I'd give you treats. You'd pretend they all ignored your visits, and you'd loll about my feet. You gnawed your way into my heart, on the hammock and on the hose, and in the early morning, you'd startle me with a poke from your wet nose. You sped through years at seven times to my just aging one. You would lead, and I would follow, watch you sleep in the warming sun. Now I still swear my love for you. I should have learned much faster, for you are now the alpha wolf, and I the lonely master. Mark Malinger.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.